This episode of Moon Tower Business is brought to you by your local State Farm agent, Alejandra de la Torre. Alejandra's team has amazing customer service, knowledgeable staff, and super competitive pricing. They also have a very convenient location in Round Rock, located at 2200 North A.W. Grimes Boulevard, Suite 500. Alejandra's team is bilingual, and they have over 52 years of combined experience in the insurance industry. Alejandra's team is very friendly and helpful, and they always go the extra mile. They even have after-hours emergency availability. So please call Alejandra's State Farm team for all of your insurance needs, whether it's auto, home, life, or business. Their telephone number is 512-244-3311, or you can see their website at www.alexdelatorre.net. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Moon Tower Business Podcast. This is your host, Joseph Obell, and today I'm speaking to Paul O'Brien, the CEO of Media Tech Ventures. Paul, welcome to the program.
It is wonderful to hear and see you, Mr. O'Bell. And actually, I'm just realizing that the O apostrophe is something we share in common. So maybe we have to talk about our Irish roots or something and how we ended up in Austin.
It is. And it's a lot of people think I'm Irish, but it's actually Lithuanian. And my great-grandfather changed the name from Obelianis to O'Bell and did the O apostrophe. And so folks think I'm Irish, but I'm actually Lithuanian.
No kidding. All right. Yeah. Well, now I'm curious. So does the O apostrophe mean something, or was that a change in the name change?
It was just the name change.
Okay. Because in the annals of Irish history, one of my favorite stories is that I'm a direct descendant of the High King of Ireland, Brian Boru, who united the island against the Vikings a thousand years ago, maybe. The O in Irish family names means son of, a lot like Mac and so forth, right? And so apparently, I've traced my ancestry, so apparently I'm son of Brian, a descendant of that family. And so if you're so inclined, go ahead and refer to me as Sir or High King Paul. I'm working hard to try to implement that, but not many people are going with me on it.
I shall. That's awesome. That's pretty interesting. Hey, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Like I told you before, I've been meaning to ask you to be on the show, follow you on social media. Excited to talk about all the things you're involved in. Before we kind of start getting into it, you can talk a little bit about your kind of your background and different things you've been involved in the past.
Yeah, cheers. I'm a huge fan and advocate of Austin, but like so many of us, I'm not originally from here. I'm in the startup community. I'm in the tech community that is such a popular topic throughout the world these days, but I'm also not really new either. I've been in Austin for 11 or 12 years now. And so I like to joke. People like to joke that there was a bit of a wave of us who came first, right? Came before that what's happening now. And I was a part of that wave leaving California, during the mortgage crisis. I was in California before that. I spent, 11 or 12 years there. I'm not Californian. And I like to point out that I think most of the people that are moving to Austin are not originally where they're from either. I'm not originally from there, but yes, I am from there. And I think that's why we like it here. That I was in California for 11 years or so, did a lot of work with what are called Series A stage startups, not just getting off the ground, but also not terribly well established yet. Most of my experience is in helping develop something that is real and tangible and possible into something meaningful. And so I had a bit of a reputation of working at that Series A stage when startups got funding and needed to start to grow and scale and operate. Found my way to Northern California because I'm an old Yahoo. which is rare. A lot of us talk about Yahoo kind of being our MBA, if you will, our grad school, in the sense that those of us that were part of Yahoo in the late 90s and early 2000s were pretty close knit. We're a tight group of folks that was a part of the internet before the hype, I suppose, or during the hype that started to boom. I grew up in Michigan. So I grew up in the Midwest. That's why I love Texas. I grew up in the Midwest, but at my age anyway, I'm looking at your picture on our screen and we roughly the same age. I'm in my 40s. When we grew up, the economy up there wasn't too hot. And so, I think it's fair to say I kind of had this blessing of experiencing both a challenging economy and a challenging ecosystem and the implications and downsides of that. And then I found myself in literally the opposite. And so I got to experience what that means and what it takes to cause that kind of thing to happen. For the sake of that personal history, my short stint between Michigan and California is that I went to Arizona State University.
Nice.
And had the distinguishing honor of being a student at Arizona State University when we were the hottest party school in the country every single year that I was there.
Excellent.
Maybe that was my fault. I don't know.
It has that reputation, I've heard, for sure.
It does. It did. It still does, certainly. But I was there at a neat time because I was there at a time when a lot of foundations and endowments started to mature around Phoenix and around the Arizona State University ecosystem, to the point where today the business college, for example, the business school from which I graduated, is considered one of the best business schools in the country. I was there when I was a freshman, it was a party school. And by the time I graduated, it was developing this pretty impressive reputation for business and architecture and engineering and so forth. So I'm pretty honored to have been a part of that evolution of that school in particular.
That's great. So I guess when you were in business school, did you know what you wanted to get involved in then, or is it just did you kind of figure it out as you went along?
Like if you're an entrepreneur, as I know you are to a great extent, Joseph, if you're an entrepreneur like me, you never know what you want to do when you grow up. You never know. I never know what I want to do tomorrow. No, I certainly didn't in college. And, if for our parents listening, for young people listening, there's definitely this increasing question of the degree, the diploma, right? And how important is college? And I think the fact that we do see a lot of college age students drop out or build a startup while they're in college, drop out and do a startup. You know, a lot of the famous ones that we're familiar with are a result of college dropouts. It's because people like us, people that have that personality, just don't necessarily fit in a curriculum and a structure and a traditional profession. Right. So I certainly had no aspirations of, being a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or some such. I floated around. I floated around the communication school. I helped run the radio there, radio station. I have a bit of a music history background because I studied music history. I thought that was fascinating. I found my way through a couple of years of college Spanish. Thought I might go into languages, but that didn't work out very well. The business college was more of a got to do something. And business probably opens up the most doors. And so even there, I started in finance because now I work in venture capital. So I'm very fascinated with that form of investment. Started in finance. Couldn't hack that. Wasn't interested in that. Classically, I'm primarily probably a marketer. And so I spent a few years going through marketing, didn't quite fit either. I ended up just getting a business administration management degree and finding my way into the future from there. It was also a neat era in that they didn't really teach computer science as we would know it now. Mm-hmm. They didn't know how to teach how to build websites and create software SaaS on the internet. It was still IT, right, back in the 90s at college. And so, here I was coming from Michigan, a computer geek. And so when I was at school, I was fascinated with HTML and code, just in a very basic sense. Mm-hmm. And I built some websites, ended up building a couple of websites for the college. And I think that's what got Yahoo's attention, right? Here's this person who's reasonably social and capable of communicating because of where he went to school and understands this internet thing we're doing up here in Silicon Valley. Come on over and join the Yahoo crowd.
So was it easy for you to kind of pick up, computers at that time and figuring out how to build a website, et cetera? I mean, was it natural, or is it something you had a process you had to learn?
Yeah, I find it kind of relates to that notion of being more entrepreneurial, that it was easy then in the sense that everything was being figured out, right? There wasn't a YouTube video. There wasn't a book,
right?
We just got on bulletin boards and forums and we asked, right? How do I do this? And what is FTP? And what is a file server, right? It's common stuff now. It was a wonderful time because people who wanted to learn and were willing to break things and were willing to just try it out and see what happens. And then we're also, conscientious of their own ignorance. Like, I don't know how to do this. And so I'm willing to ask, right? As long as you were willing to talk about it and ask. And those people in particular then, very easily learned this stuff because there was no class, right? We learned it by figuring it out. And today it's actually something that I'm a little terrified of in working with students and startups and even as a parent myself, that I'm a little terrified of, that if you look at our school systems today, they treat teaching technology as making sure the kids have an iPad and do everything on an app. I knew how to put together a computer and take it apart. And
it's totally different.
It's completely different, right? And it's not that I'm no engineer. I have no idea how to build software. I have not a clue. I'm no engineer. I don't know Ruby on Rails. I don't know JavaScript. I don't know any of that kind of stuff. It's more so just that philosophical kind of difference, right? That today they're teaching a skill. They're teaching a thing in order for you to get a job. Well, around the 90s through early 2000, they didn't do that yet. They didn't know how to do that yet. And so I think you saw a lot more entrepreneurship and that early kind of web development, really crazy creativity. Because there was no script, right? There was no book, there was no curriculum, there was no, it's just whatever anybody could figure out, could do that. It's a different quality, different characteristic that I wrote an article not long ago about how our education system these days drums entrepreneurship out of people. All right, because
I can see that
process and the academics, blah 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 blah, and yeah, you can see it. I'm really passionate about trying to figure out how to serve the entrepreneurs, how to make sure that we don't lose them, how to make sure they are celebrated as much or more than a lot of other jobs, because it's the entrepreneurs who take the risks and create opportunities.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you said you were in radio. I guess what got you interested in the media tech world?
A little bit of that. So one of the websites that I built and a big reason I was drawn to Austin is I took a few music history classes when I was in college. Just fascinated with it. I loved the 60s and back even further, right? How rock and roll came about. And nobody else was putting any of that stuff online at that point. And so I used those classes. I used what I was learning to give me a subject matter to create a website. And so the first website I created was called Rare Exception, which was a terrible name, but it was called Rare Exception. I ended up calling it the Octopus's Garden, and our Beatles fans in the audience would appreciate the reference. I wrote a lot and created web pages. There were no social network, no social media, just web pages about, I wrote about the American Pie and Don McLean. I wrote about the Eagles. I wrote a lot about the Beatles. just stuff I found interesting. Actually, a lot of it's on my blog and my website today as an archive. I transferred over a lot of that content. I wrote about the legends of John Lennon and the number 9. Again, for our Beatles fans, if you know those ones. I wrote a lot about the theories about Paul McCartney dying and how he died in the 60s and was replaced. All right, so I found that kind of stuff fascinating. And one day when I was a senior, I got an email from George Martin. And there was no Gmail at this point, right? There was no Google. That blew my mind. That, you know, here a 20-something year old figured out how to hack some stuff together and put it up on this internet thing, the World Wide Web, right? We barely even call it the internet yet. The World Wide Web. And I caught the attention of somebody on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
That took the time to invest in me. You know, I was doing radio at the same time and so forth. And then I found myself at Yahoo. And Yahoo, again, for our Austin listeners, Yahoo then was an amazing time relevant to us here because that was the acquisition of Mark Cuban's company, Broadcast.com. That was when a lot of what Austin is known for today online was actually kind of uncovered and invented at Yahoo. Social media kind of stuff, advertising kind of stuff, data related to this stuff. And then a lot of web properties, right? Sports and e-commerce and so forth. E-commerce is huge in Austin if folks aren't familiar with that. Yahoo Shopping was big back then. And it was when I was at Yahoo that I saw how they were trying to converge all of this stuff, right? They were trying to turn traditional radio into online radio. They were trying to figure out what to do with video. There was a short-lived stint there where they tried to make the Yahoo homepage all about video, and it was short-lived because nobody really wanted a Yahoo homepage with nothing but video on it. But you know, if you appreciate that philosophically, they were realizing that all of this stuff was converging. The future was going to be about how it converges. That radio was going to be digital, ultimately podcasting as we're doing now. Video was going to be streaming. News, print was going to be online, right? All of that actually manifested 20 some years ago. And that's what hooked me was from there working with some startups that were in that space. I worked with some startups that disrupted the news industry, that disrupted the social media industry. And long story short, when I came to Austin, 11 years ago now, when I came to Austin, to be frank, and hopefully this doesn't rub anybody the wrong way, because I mean it with the best of passion and intentions. When I came to Austin, it really kind of bothered me that we called this the live music capital of the world, and yet that really wasn't true. That our music industry was struggling and suffering, and musicians were not making any money, and our understanding of media technology was 10 years out of date. That we were building event websites that were old fashioned. We didn't even recognize all the video game companies that were based in this part of the world. And it was those kind of two experiences coming together and thinking, you know what, Austin could be. We've got South by Southwest here, for crying out loud. Austin could and should be the dominant hub for the United States anyways in the technology in media. Not just the arts, but the technology in media, because Los Angeles and New York and Silicon Valley are not. They're not figuring that out. They're still their traditional media hubs, which is a good thing. But if we're understanding the technology side of those things, let's fix what's going on in music. Let's fix what's going on in news. Let's celebrate that this is such a vibrant podcasting community and actually has a lot of history in podcasting. And the rest is history. Converging place, Austin, and passion for Austin and the creative class and the artists here and the technology folks here into, to be honest, what I think Austin's identity really is and should be, which is technology and media, technology and music. That's one of the things we do better than anywhere else in the world.
No doubt. And you just touched on something I was about to ask a little bit, and I'm gonna ask you to elaborate a little bit more. In the past 20 years, how have you seen media tech evolve over time, from what we had when the internet just first came out to today as we're seeing stuff continuing to evolve?
That's honestly, that's one of my favorite questions, because it's for all of your listeners in whatever industry you're in, it's incredibly important to appreciate that our entire economy is built on the internet now. I don't care what line of work you're in. You could be in real estate, right? Or your listeners who are realtors know full well that you have to understand Zillow, and you have to create some sort of community around what you do. The big realtors in my neighborhood, for example, all have massive Facebook pages now. Right. Why? Because that's how they, you know, contribute to the community. And so the evolution is actually very, very fundamental. You don't have to know how to build a website. You don't have to know how to code. You really just need to know how this stuff works. You have to know how a search engine fundamentally works and why it does what it does. And you have to know how social media actually works and what it is and what how it does what it does. And as everybody catches on to those things, it actually gets rather easy to benefit from and participate in the internet, in the digital media economy, in the media technology economy. By which I mean that we still have a long way to go in everybody appreciating and understanding that a lot, not a lot, far too many local Austin businesses don't create enough content about what they're doing. They don't put on their website. If you're a restaurant, for example, you know what I can do with that PDF of your menu? Absolutely nothing. You're taking the easy way out. And if you're struggling with and trying to figure out why you're not getting an audience on your restaurant website, it's because Google doesn't know how to do anything with that. And Facebook doesn't know how to do anything with that. That these basic fundamental ideas are really critical, because, you know, when I'm looking for somewhere to go out to eat tonight, if it is the live music capital of the world, what I'm looking for is live music. You know how easy it is to actually find live music in Austin? It's actually really incredibly difficult. Why? Because restaurants aren't doing the basics. The venues aren't doing the basics, right? That I know there's live music at the restaurant around the corner. I can't find that online. That's how the world works now, is my point, right? That we use QuickBooks online for accounting. We use CRMs and email to promote to our audience. Really basic stuff. Now, I want to catch people up about that as fast as I can. Where the evolution is really going, though, is that it is our discussion, our point about convergence, that it's all converging as one thing, that people still misunderstand or think that social media and social networks are some separate thing. Like it's a platform. Like you don't like Facebook. You don't want to be on social media. Where it's going is that the entire internet is actually social media. Everything online is a social network. My blog, my website is social media. Our Media Tech Ventures website is a social network, right? And so what we very quickly need to do as an ecosystem and to appreciate the internet and what's going on in media is we need to understand and appreciate that every experience on the internet is connected. It's tracking us, like it or not, privacy folks. Everybody's being tracked. That's how it works. It's engaging. You can interact with it. And it's what we call omni-channel. Omni-channel means that we actually participate in every format. That if you write an article, you should also podcast it. And if you podcast it, you should do that in audio and video. You need to put that on social media 6 different ways to Sunday and on 12 different platforms. Notice, I'm sure your listeners are thinking about this. Most businesses don't do that. Most businesses don't understand how to do that. And so right. It's because of that a lot of businesses struggle and fail, or they pay people, they pay agencies, they pay people to do it for them, which doesn't really work either, because this is more of a reality of the way the world works today. You've got to do these things if you want to be a participant in this economy.
I agree. I mean, I was actually online looking at a business, and their website was bare bones. They just didn't have very much information, and it's just, I can see how it could be a problem for business. I mean, you got to get with the times and you have to be able to put out information that folks need to see. Like, just like you said, I mean, people that just don't show up to restaurants anymore. They look online, they want to know what's all about, what's the menu, what are the different things they offer. And so I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, the restaurant scenario is one of my favorite talking points, especially in this town, because unfortunately we're seeing so many classic historic Austin restaurants and venues close, right? And it's one of my favorite talking points because that shouldn't be the case. That unfortunately too many restaurants, too many foodies think that or presume that or hope that the reason people go out to eat is to get the food, is to get good food. It's actually not true. People go out to eat because it's an experience. People go out to eat because it's something other than just the food. And so you see a lot of restaurant websites, for example, they celebrate the food. Look at all the pictures of the food. And isn't it wonderful? You're going to love it. Look at our reviews. The food is great. And what people are actually asking for is, yeah, but when is happy hour? And who's playing tonight? And, you know, and can I watch sports on TV? Right. Or honestly, do I have to watch sports, right? Are there TVs all over the place? Because I'm going to bring my whole family. I want to do something than just eat, right? I'm doing it to pay you for some experience. That's what's got to shine through in this stuff. That when we experience restaurants or bars or music venues or really any local business, it's true of banks, right? Why do I go to Chase Bank anymore? For no reason at all, because I just go to the ATM. But did you know Chase Banks in this town actually have coffee shops and little co-working spaces in their front lobby?
No,
right? Who knows that? Because they don't promote that, right? But I might go hang out at my Chase Bank and talk to the banker and maybe get a loan and get some work done and get some free coffee. If we knew that that's what these things were doing, if it's not known through media, if it's not known through the internet, if it's not known on the website and on Facebook, then nobody knows. And the businesses continue to struggle. We could change that very easily. I want us to.
Talking about social media, one of the newest platforms for social media is Clubhouse, where you can, it's kind of like an online conference going on all day, just all audio. And I've seen competitors for that. Twitter's one of them. They have Twitter Spaces that's coming out now. And I think there's a few other ones that are in discussions. I think LinkedIn has talked about doing something similar. What do you think, what are your thoughts on that format of a platform generally? And then what do you see is going to be the next thing after that we're going to see in social media?
Yeah, one wonderful question, because it actually is a decent example of a lot of what we've been talking about. And so it gives me an opportunity to clarify some of this stuff. If you've not been on Clubhouse, everybody, right? What is Clubhouse? Well, it's one or more people that are able to chit chat, and it gets broadcast, right, through the app. And so you can have other people then listening in. And if they want to, they can participate in the conversation, right? They can, the audience can jump in. That's Clubhouse. It's gotten a lot of hype because it sounds incredible and it sounds wonderful. Let me throw you a curveball. You listen to AM talk radio. It's the same damn thing, right? So what is Clubhouse? Clubhouse, you know, Joseph, you referred to some things as competitors, and it's actually more appropriate to refer to Clubhouse as a feature that just happened to get really big. And so, you know, LinkedIn and Twitter Spaces and Slack's going to add the same stuff if you use Slack. They're not really competing with Clubhouse. What they're doing is they're just adding the feature. Gotcha. Right? They're adding the ability to talk on that experience. And it really is just AM talk radio. And here's what I mean. That, you know, you got to have a couple of hosts that are good at talking on the air. Otherwise, it's boring as hell, right? Nobody wants to just listen to random people talking. So you actually have to have an experience and a show and a meaningful conversation and teach some stuff or have some cool interviews, and you have to be able to be fluid and dynamic and kind of go with the conversation. Because what else happens on AM talk radio? Well, you can call in, right? You can call in and talk to the show host. That's what Clubhouse is, right? So what's been happening with Clubhouse is just in the last few weeks, a lot of social media has been floating out these provocative questions. How many people have been on Clubhouse for more than 2 weeks? As a provocative question. Now, why is that provocative question taking place? Well, because most people who are on Clubhouse are not good show hosts. And most people don't have time to just listen in on conversations. And so you do it a few times, or you do it to listen into, you know, into the celebrity guests, or you do it to, you know, but by and large, 90% of what's there isn't going to last. It's not going to last very long, because at the end of the day, it's going to have to be produced by quality hosts in order to retain an audience, number one. And number two, most people aren't going to bother with necessarily getting on Clubhouse, because my audience on Twitter is bigger and I could just do it on Twitter, or my audience on LinkedIn is bigger and I could just do it on LinkedIn, right? So why do I need to bother with the Clubhouse experience? That what it reinforces about some of the things we were talking about is that all of this stuff is converging.
That's interesting. I never thought about it as talk radio. I mean, you're exactly right. It's the same thing as people calling in and talking to people that are having a conversation about whatever topic. And, you know, I've gotten on there a few times and I got pulled in by the buzz about different folks getting on there. Elon Musk was getting on there once. And actually I found a few different rooms that were pretty interesting and had some really good conversations.
Absolutely.
But it's like you said, that's not all the time. I mean, if you scroll through the different Clubhouse rooms that are there, a lot of them are just kind of conversations that don't have a lot of substance, right? And they're just going on and on. And then the rooms, some of them are very big. And if you try to speak, you know, you could wait a really long time to get in there. I guess just kind of like talk radio, you could wait an hour or so. Yep. But yeah, yep. I mean, I could see what you're saying there.
Well, and you know, and keep in mind, my point about production is in talk radio, there's somebody to answer the calls there, right? There's a screener. And so they truly end up with a bit of a better show experience, because when Joe calls the Paul O'Brien show, right, there's somebody there who first says, all right, Joe, what do you want to talk about on the air? Okay. And then by the way, make sure you don't swear and make sure you, whatever. So that when you get on the air, it's a little bit more engaging. It's a little bit more, you know, put together and organized, and it comes across as something more entertaining or interesting. One of the exciting directions that we're seeing in Media Tech Ventures, and we're looking for people who want to explore this with us, by the way, is if that analogy is true, right? If these apps on social media, these features on social media, are really kind of analogous to the old radio format, then why couldn't that just exist perpetually on a website? Why couldn't you just tune in, for example, dial into, right, a website? Dial into mediatech.ventures. And what's broadcasting there? That show. It's just always on, right? Why do you need to have an app? Why can't you just visit a website? Like you dial the radio, right? You dial the radio station, tune into that, and it's just on. And maybe we're talking, maybe we're not. Maybe it's a recording of the Moon Tower show that's in syndication, right? Maybe it's live. Maybe we've got people calling in. Maybe it's commercials. Maybe we're streaming music from 11 o'clock at night till 4 o'clock in the morning, because nobody's awake. So we stream music at that point, right? Why not finally, truly kind of converge that always on broadcast radio experience with a web property, a website, with the website literally just being 99.5 on, you know, on the dial. And you know, if you want to turn the volume down, turn the volume down and just read the stuff on the website. But if you want to turn it up, then it could sit in the background and it's your radio station while you're at work, or it's your talk show that you're chiming into. And then too, it kind of streamlines that call-in experience, because through technology, through a website, you could now chat with us, chat and text with us. You could, you know, share something and push it out to social media with us. You could call in, right? There are a host of different ways that these forms of media finally truly converge. We could be talking about an article live now, an article on the website live now with people calling in to have a conversation about it. It's really an exciting kind of future, I think, but we're not quite there technically. So anybody who's interested in trying to figure that out, come hang out with us on Media Tech Ventures, and we're poking around with how to make that possible.
That sounds awesome. I hope to see that someday. It's great. Switching gears, real quick. I'd like to see if you could just talk a little bit about Media Tech Ventures and what it's all about.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you. Because my pleasure in particular with your show and your audience, because hopefully it's clear we are born of and passionate about a lot of what we're doing being evident and impactful and meaningful because of and for Austin in particular. That we actually do a host of different things, and it's somewhat confusing to people. It's confusing to people on purpose, because we do a host of different things. Media Tech Ventures, we think of it this way. We set out whether you're a business owner or a lawyer or an investor, you know, think about it this way. Most entrepreneurs and most capital, venture capital, public money, always seem to miss each other. They always seem to have a disconnect in some way, right? They just don't see eye to eye. They don't understand each other, right? They're completely different worlds. And especially when it comes to the capital market, the business investor behaves very differently than the angel investor, which operates very differently than venture capital, which is not remotely the same as the city's fund and grant for small businesses, right? That capital all has different expectations and returns on investment that they need to find, right? And, you know, and so try to match that up then with the entrepreneurs and the startup communities and the new businesses, that someone who's building the next Uber, you know, is a completely different entrepreneur and business owner than somebody who's trying to get a restaurant off the ground and open a restaurant in town.
Right.
And if we're not clear about how those various things work, how they operate, if we're not clear about the expectations, if we're not clear about what the capital considerations are, if we're not on the same page about what the outcomes are, right? Can this get acquired? Can it go public? Is it just going to be a lifestyle business forever? If we're not clear about all that, we have incredible inefficiency when it comes to innovation, right? Because you, as a business owner or startup founder, you're banging your head up against the wall trying to talk to everybody to get money from wherever you can. And they all have completely different expectations. And then, so then you get misled, right? Somebody says, hey, if you have more customers, we'll invest in you. And somebody else says, no, if I need to know if you can get acquired by Netflix. And so then you go focus on that. And somebody else says, no, if you had a few more software engineers, we'd love what you're doing. Go get us a few more software engineers. And the whole time you're going, yeah, but I can't do any of that because I need your money. I heard an amusing perspective on Austin today that too many investors in Austin just want to invest in the Longhorn. If you just show me the Longhorn, that's really all I want. I want to buy the thing.
Yeah.
Well, startups aren't like that. Startups aren't Longhorns. We don't have a Longhorn yet. We're figuring out how to grow it. We're figuring out how to create it, right? Anyway, so that mismatch is important. Now, set that notion aside. People like Gary Vaynerchuk and Jack Ma and some other notable folks have been saying a couple of things for years. Absolutely every company in the world is a technology company. And what they're referring to is that every business these days, kind of our point about digital media and the internet, every business these days needs to be familiar with this stuff. So you got to be a technology company in some way. You aren't necessarily creating semiconductors and software. It's not the point. You have to use the website. You have to use an app, right? So you got to be a technology company in some way. We like to joke that Coca-Cola is actually a technology company because they're building supply chains and the infrastructure to sell sugar water. That's what they do, right?
That's true.
Now, the other side of that narrative is that every company is also a media company. That if no one knows what you're doing, if no one hears about what you're doing, if you can't tell the stories, if you aren't promoting it, then no one cares. You literally have nothing. You have no business if you're not in the media business. And Coca-Cola is a great example of that too. Because why? Because they're famous for their wonderful commercials that makes everybody want to buy sugar water, right? So every company in the world is a media and a technology company. And so it dawned on us, could we better distinguish for the capital classes, the grants, the corporate ventures, the VCs, could we better distinguish what's going on in the startup community by focusing on that in particular, by teaching specifically the technology and the media side of what they're working on, and helping them learn how to pitch and tell stories and grow and so forth. That's the mission and vision behind what we do. We work with a lot of investors. We work with hundreds of startups. We're in a dozen countries. We're not necessarily terribly well known locally because we're not just an Austin thing. We're all over the place running our programs. What we do is we run a 12-week incubator to teach founders how to do startups. And that's been wildly successful. We work with economic development organizations and governments to help build media technology ecosystems in their cities. We have a technology team that's building infrastructure for startups. And we work very closely with industry-related organizations like South by Southwest or the Consumer Electronics Show or a great media technology conference in Europe called Wallifornia, that we work with these organizations that help promote and explain and endorse and celebrate our space. That media innovation, media technology is really something that's critical to absolutely every business. And therefore the innovation, the startups in the media technology space, right? The people who created Zoom, which we're recording on right now, the people creating podcast technology, the WP Engine. We all know WP Engine. That's a media technology company. Why? They built technology to create websites and content. That's a media technology company. Those kind of companies are the second largest slice of our economy. Healthcare is the biggest slice of our entire economy. The media industry, the media technology industry, is the second largest slice of our entire economy. So it's this massively underserved and important opportunity for us to fix and address.
Very interesting. Can you give a couple of examples of some of the startup companies, the type of startup companies that are in your incubator program?
There's a wonderful company that's in town called Blended Sense that recognize that small businesses really don't have the experience or the resources to capably produce video for commercials or to create a YouTube channel or what have you. And so they built a platform and aggregated a group of video producers and editors and so forth to really democratize that, to make it very easy for small businesses to get access to stuff they couldn't otherwise do. That's media technology. We have also in town, a bakery, a baking shop that realized all that we're talking about and said, you know what, you know, in order to be a successful baker and baking shop, I need to have a magazine and maybe a podcast about baking. You know, baking shows are hot on television right now. How do I do that? So she joined us and came through the program a couple of years ago. So it's that kind of local, more locally focused stuff, but at the same time, it's also really big stuff. We're pretty tight with the Grammys and Disney, Netflix is media technology, Spotify is media technology. For those of you in the ad business or the business world, DoubleClick and advertising technology is media tech. I want to get into politics. A lot of what Donald Trump ranted about with regard to fake news, it's media technology that's going to help fix that, right? So we get involved in a lot of government and thought leadership kind of discussions about what do we do about fake news and what do we do about bias and what do we do about social media privacy and social media security, right? Those are all technical questions in the media business. Decent example of a wide cross-section of the things that we work with or get involved with.
So Blended Sense, you mentioned Blended Sense. I had the founders on the podcast a while back. It was probably one of the first 20 episodes and they're great. Love talking to them. Very, very exciting stuff they're doing.
Brilliant. Yeah. I mean, what's fun about our world is, and why I think this is so important for Austin, what's fun about the media technology space is, you know, let's be frank. If you're not into finance and banking and investment, then the fintech space doesn't necessarily mean anything to you, and it's not necessarily appealing, right? If you're not in retail, or you know, if you don't have a boutique store, or then the e-commerce industry might not necessarily be that interesting to you. We're in the media tech space is Austin, right? I mean, what the way to get our venues to get more butts in seats and be successful again, the way to help our Austin musicians, the way to celebrate the Austin Film Festival and our video game ecosystem. That's this world. That's what we do. And everybody can find something they're passionate about in that case, because heck, you probably just love sitting on the couch and watching Netflix and Disney Plus. Well, that's thanks to media technology. It's called OTT. We can get real technical about what it is and how it all works. But that's this evolution of what used to be, right, a television station broadcasting something over the airwaves or over a cable. Well, now it's all literally just the internet. You may not realize or see it as the internet because it's not on your laptop or a phone. But when you've got a Roku device or an Amazon Fire Stick device in your home, or you've got an Amazon Alexa streaming music, that's literally just the same thing that we're doing on YouTube And on a website, it's just getting pushed to your television or a speaker in your house, that there's internet infrastructure there that has digitized all of this media content. And it's now making it available to us in many more ways that, that we can get excited about and enjoy.
Absolutely. Not to go down a rabbit hole, but you mentioned Donald Trump, and we're talking about social media, and it just came to mind. There's been buzz in the news about Donald Trump potentially starting his own social media platform since he got kicked off of Twitter and Instagram and et cetera. What are your thoughts on that, Jenner, like in terms of what that would look like, number one, and like, would it work?
That's actually a wonderful question too, for a host of reasons that, political reasons and social reasons and technology reasons and media reasons. It's always a hot button issue. So I might frustrate some people with the reality. Here's the reality. I already said it. Everything on the internet is social media. I could start a social media website tomorrow. It would literally take me a few hours to stand it up. It is that simple to do. Social media is people connecting because of the internet, right? And so the notion that he can or can't do it is misunderstood. He absolutely can do it. It doesn't take anything. now, then the other notion that some entity, you know, Amazon or the hosting, that might ban him. They won't host him. They won't serve that. That's also misunderstood. And excuse my French, everybody, it's also kind of bullshit, because anybody can host a website with just a laptop. In case y'all don't know how that works, it wouldn't be that hard to stand up a computer somewhere, and there is DonaldTrumpSocialNetwork.com. You don't need a service provider. You don't need something that allows it or approves it. And then here's where it gets even more interesting. One of the reasons we're so active in the debates and the discussions about privacy and security on social media and what can and cannot be allowed is that the internet doesn't actually exist in a state or a country. The internet is virtual. It's global. So whatever laws or regulations Texas or the United States tries to pass on Twitter, for example, people in China don't care. they're gonna do whatever they want, right? That recently the Australian government, right, tried to pass a bunch of legislation to obligate social media to pay news sources for news. What did the big social media companies do? They just said, okay, well, then we won't be available in Australia, because we're not gonna pay news sources for people on our site. That's not fair to us. Right? We're just a site making it possible. Here's what I mean by we're just a site making it possible, and why I'm so kind of both sides of that question about Donald Trump maybe having a social network is, at the end of the day, if you're really an American. I just said that. Yes. If you're really an American, the most important law of the land is the First Amendment, that people can say and publish and write and curate whatever they want. And that means the bad along with the good. It does. That's kind of a cost of being in the United States, is you got to put up with the stuff we don't like as much as you got to put up with the stuff we do like. That the government should not have any say in this stuff at all, because we're protected by the First Amendment. And even if we weren't protected by the First Amendment, or somebody trying to censor or ban this stuff, again, the fact is, well, he could just do it in China, or he could do it in Russia, and they'll happily host it, and they're not going to ban anything, and they don't care. And people need to appreciate and recognize that when you're using Facebook, it has nothing to do with the United States. It has nothing to do with the fact that you're in the U.S. You could just as easily use a website that's based in Antarctica, and all you know is this is a website, right? So we've got to, as a society, we've got to get past the idea that we can regulate and control and censor or ban or whatever. Whatever's on the internet, because it's just technically not possible. There's no way to guarantee your security. There is no way to ensure your privacy. The internet is in fact public. It's not a private environment. It's a public environment. It's like going outside. So all these discussions and debates we're having lately misunderstand how it works. So will Trump's thing work? Of course it will, because there are enough people that want it. And it's not hard and it's not expensive. So of course people will love it. Will people try to censor or ban it? Sure, they will. And can companies censor and ban it, right? Can Facebook say, nope, we're not going to allow that? Yes, of course they can. Because that's not a violation of free speech. That's Facebook's property. That's Facebook's company. They could ban whatever they want. That's their right. What can't happen is the president or Congress can't say, or we shouldn't allow them to say, that's not allowed. Because that would violate the free speech, right? That those fans and those supporters and Donald Trump and so forth have, whether we like it or not, they have to create that and to talk about that stuff. They have that right. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing, even if you don't like it. It's a good thing because it's what allows us to talk about the other stuff that they don't like. But, you know, it works both ways. We got to get comfortable with free speech. We got to get comfortable with technology being ubiquitous and virtual and global. And the new reality is governments don't have control. Governments can't have control. That's why governments are so aggressively leaning in on what the internet is and how it works, because they're terrified about the fact that it can't be controlled. There's no way at all to put reins around and wrangle what's on the internet. And that's a threat. If you think about it, it's a threat to people who do control or want control or need control. It's a threat to that because you could just go somewhere else and do something else and circumvent it.
Very well said. And that's been the topic of discussion for a while, and he's been saying he's going to do it. He hasn't done it. So I guess we'll just see what happens. I know you got to head out soon. So I have just a few final questions for you as we wrap up here. So you've been an entrepreneur for a while. You've been in venture capital. What is one of the biggest lessons you learned, I guess, as an entrepreneur that you could share with other entrepreneurs that are listening right now that are working on a business or a venture or an idea?
Two things. We run our incubator 2-3 times a week. So I actually give this advice quite frequently. Two things. Let me take three things. Number one, it's all about team every single time. And in fact, we're starting to see a lot more AI and machine learning data on behalf of venture capital. That's literally just looking at the skill sets and the quality and the characteristics of the team. Will they figure this out? So do you have that team? If you don't know how to do marketing, find somebody who does. If you need somebody who understands the finance side, if you need it, that get it. It does come down to the team, and it comes down to the team in the sense of passion and commitment and tenacity. It comes down to what's called fluid intelligence. If you think you're right, if you think you're certain, you are not. I guarantee it. You are not, because startups pivot constantly, daily. That what you need is a team that's capable of doing that and is comfortable doing that. That tomorrow, what are we going to do tomorrow? I don't know. We'll see what happens and focus on that, right? And reinforce that consideration. You've got to have that personality trait and those qualities, number one. Number two, somewhat evident in the first point, it's all about execution. Do it. I've been having a bunch of Facebook chats on the Austin Startups community on Facebook lately with people who are trying to transition out of consulting firms or they want to have a strategy job with startups. Those are really tough people to transition to startups. Do it. We're not having a meeting. I'm not explaining it to you. You can't say to me, oh, that's not my job. Oh, I don't do that. Nope, that's not how startups work. If the trash needs to be taken out, take out the trash. If the website broke, fix the website. You're not the developer, I don't care. Fix the website, figure it out, right? If you're not all promoting it, if you're not all on Twitter retweeting stuff, right? You just do it, you go. And that's why the team is important, right? Does everybody know what they're doing? Do they understand this stuff? And then the last thing is more difficult to really find and get your hands around. And it's a bit of where we kind of started the conversation. You got to have this entrepreneurial spirit, which is what? High risk tolerance and a determination to fix problems. That's really what an entrepreneur is. An entrepreneur doesn't necessarily start businesses. They have this fixation with stuff that doesn't work and they just have to do something about it. That's what it means. And so those kind of people tend to result in better founders. They don't necessarily make great executives, and they usually don't work out very well in companies because they're always doing different things and they can't seem to stay on track or do their job. That's kind of the point, right? Tomorrow we discover that our email platform isn't working right. Well, then just go figure it out, go fix it. Right. That's what's necessary in startups. Passion, commitment, focus, tenacity, fluid intelligence, putting the right people in place, and being risk tolerant and flexible. And notice I said nothing about what most people quote. It has nothing to do with customers. It has absolutely zilch to do with your MVP or your prototype. Nothing. What's exciting is that in the last 5 years, we're starting to see more and more people talk like I just did. That if somebody's saying to you, "Hey, I may invest if you have more customers," they're probably a bad investor.
Right.
In the startup community, they probably are a bad investor because customers don't prove anything in the startup community, right? You need that team and that diversity and that skill set and that passion and the flexibility. And now here's maybe one more point. Here's a rub. Here's a challenge. One of the reasons I do what I do, and we built an incubator for founders and we run some other incubators. One of the reasons I do that is there are some cold, hard facts. And cold, hard fact is that the average age of a successful founder is 44 years old.
Wow.
Cold, hard fact. Now, why is that the case? Because it also takes experience. It also takes a network of people that you can very easily and efficiently turn to. And it also takes resources because nobody's going to invest in you just to start. You've got to be able to do it yourself, right? You've got to have enough to be able to get it going. And unfortunately, my point, right, the cold, hard reality, unfortunately, young people tend not to have that. And disadvantaged people and you know, people of color often, right, from different economic classes, just don't have those kind of resources. And so what we do, what I'm passionate about, what people like me are passionate about at DivInc and Sputnik and a lot of these other incredible startup programs in this part of the world, is the fact that every entrepreneur should have the opportunity without the disadvantage, without having access to those people, without having access to experience, without being able to get some of the resources. And so that's the kind of stuff we do, right? We teach, we build the communities, we make sure that 20-year-old founder, the best we can, has as much of that advantage that the 40-year-old does, because their ideas are just as good. And unfortunately, they're likely going to struggle or suffer because they just don't have 20 years of experience yet. And they don't know 10,000 people that do that kind of thing. And they, you know, and they haven't saved up $50,000 or $100,000 that they can use to start something. Let's make that difference together. So got to fix the technical stuff. And then you got to have those personality quirks and qualities and traits that make you an incredible founder. It's actually a lot easier than it sounds and seems. And that's why we're seeing Austin boom. We're seeing Austin boom because we've started to realize that that's really what it takes. The more we can support those kind of people and those kind of innovations, we're going to create a lot more jobs and a lot more innovation and a lot more wealth in this part of the world.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And that's great advice for entrepreneurs. Couple last questions for you before we wrap up. Number one, how can folks learn more about you and Media Tech Ventures and Collective, different things you're involved in online? How can they or find you on social media? Number one. And number two, what is your favorite restaurant in Austin, Texas?
Two might be an interesting one to share. Number one, to be honest, I'm pretty easy to find online. Hopefully that's kind of apparent after all we've talked about. I built the Texas Startups Facebook page, for example. And so most of the Texas founders and investors and mentors are all part of this Facebook experience that I run. Honestly, if you just look up Paul O'Brien Austin on Google, I'll show up because I know how to use search engines. I'm kind of known as SEO Brian, not because I do search or SEO, if you're familiar with those ideas. I used to. So I have this handle, SEO Brian. That's my website. That's my Twitter. And then Media Tech Ventures is literally that name is the domain. It's mediatech.ventures. And we built, I think I mentioned, we built a whole social network there. So if you really want to just connect with us, all you need to do is sign up and you can ping me and chat with me. And we did that on purpose, right? To create an experience for artists and media professionals and investors and mentors in our industry to create an experience that makes it easier for everybody to connect and chat, that we break down some of those barriers that we were talking about. We break down how difficult it is to know all the right people.
Right.
We're trying to fix that by putting it online. So that's the first one. Second one, man, I don't even know if I have a decent answer for it, because I like experiences. So I'm not a foodie in that sense. I like going to neat places and doing neat things. And so I love Thai Spice over on 360, because I think they got great Thai food, but they got a neat view of the Hill Country. I love the Steiner Steakhouse. I live out in Steiner Ranch. I love the Steiner Steakhouse. It's up on the mountain. Gorgeous views of the lake. Food's fantastic. Live music's usually pretty good. To be honest, I even love like the Oasis. Nice. What a perfect place to go get a margarita or something and hang out and have a good time. Food is secondary to me. So when you ask about restaurants, what rambles through my head are where the cool places to hang out. You know, I love a lot of the old venues downtown, right? That they're just neat places to go hang out for a little bit. I love going to the Driscoll and just hanging out. It's got character, right? It's got atmosphere. That kind of stuff is what matters and makes Austin unique and different and better than a lot of other cities that just have chains and franchises, you know, throughout the world.
Absolutely. Thai Spice is a great one too. I've been to the one in, I guess, I don't know if there's one in Lakeway. I don't know if there's other ones, but that one's amazing.
Yep. Good calls.
Awesome. Paul, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and having this conversation. Really, really enjoyed it. And thank you for sharing your story. Hope to have you on again sometime.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Anytime. Wonderful talking to you, Joseph.
Thank you, sir.
This episode is brought to you by Vineyard Sun. Vineyard Sun is a local Austin company that makes quality sunglasses made from sustainable materials. You can see their styles on vineyardsun.com or follow them on Instagram @vineyard_sun.